Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure. His auspicious presence is meant for everyone's benediction, and His affectionate smiling and glancing touch the core of the heart. The Lord's beautiful bodily colour is blackish, and His broad chest is the resting place of the Goddess of Fortune, who glorifies the entire spiritual world, the summit of all heavenly planets. Thus it appeared that the Lord was personally spreading the beauty and good fortune of the spiritual world. Please repeat. The Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure.
The Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure.
His auspicious presence
is meant for everyone's benediction.
And His affectionate smiling and glancing
touch the core of the heart.
The Lord's beautiful bodily colour is blackish. His broad chest is the resting place of the Goddess of Fortune,
who glorifies the entire spiritual world,
the summit of all heavenly planets.
Thus it appeared that the Lord was personally spreading
the beauty and good fortune of the spiritual world. Purport. When the Lord came, He was pleased with everyone. Therefore, it is stated here, Krishna Prasada Sumukham. The Lord knew that even the offensive doormen were His pure devotees, although by chance they committed an offense at the feet of other devotees. To commit an offense against a devotee is very dangerous in devotional service. Lord Chaitanya therefore said that an offense to a devotee is just like a mad elephant run loose. When a mad elephant enters a garden, it tramples all the plants. Similarly, an offense unto the feet of a pure devotee murders one's position in devotional service. It's quite a statement, murders one's position. On the part of the Lord, there was no offended mood because He does not accept any offense created by His sincere devotee. But a devotee should be very cautious of committing offenses at the feet of another devotee. The Lord, being equal to all and being especially inclined to His devotee, looked as mercifully at the offenders as at the offended. This attitude of the Lord was due to His unlimited quantity of transcendental qualities. His cheerful attitude towards the devotees was so pleasing and heart-touching that His very smile was attractive for them. That attraction was glorious not only for all the higher planets of this material world, but beyond, for the spiritual world also. Generally, a human being has no idea of what the constitutional position is in the higher material planets, which are far better constituted in regard to all paraphernalia. Yet the Vaikuntha planet is so pleasing and so celestial that it is compared to the middle jewel or locket in a necklace of jewels. In this verse, the words Sprihaniya Tama indicate that the Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure because He has all the transcendental qualities. Although only some of these are aspired for by persons who hanker after the pleasure of merging in the impersonal Brahman, there are other aspirants who want to associate with the Lord personally as His servants. The Lord is so kind that He gives shelter to everyone, both impersonalists and devotees. He gives shelter to the impersonalists in His impersonal Brahman effulgence, whereas He gives shelter to the devotees in His personal abodes known as the Vaikuntha Lokas. He is especially inclined to His devotee. He touches the core of the heart of the devotee simply by smiling and glancing over him. The Lord is always served in the Vaikuntha Loka by many hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, as stated in the Brahma Sangita. Lakshmi Sahasra Sada Sambrahma Sevyamanam. In this material world, one is glorified if he is favored even a pinch by the Goddess of Fortune. So we can simply imagine how glorified is the kingdom of God in the spiritual world, where many hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune engage in the direct service of the Lord. Another feature of this verse is that it openly declares where the Vaikuntha lokas are situated. They are situated as the summit of all the heavenly planets which are above the sun globe, at the upper limit of the universe, and are known as Satyaloka or Brahmaloka. The spiritual world is situated beyond the universe. Therefore, it is stated here that the spiritual world, Vaikuntha Loka, is the summit of all planetary systems. Krishna prasada sumukham sprihaniyadama snehavaloka kalayaridi samsprishantam shame pratavarasi sobitaya sriyasvas chudamanim subhagayantam ivatmadishnyam. The Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure. His auspicious presence is meant for everyone's benediction, and his affectionate smiling and glancing touch the core of the heart. The Lord's beautiful bodily colour is blackish, and his broad chest is the resting place of the goddess of fortune, who glorifies the entire spiritual world, the summit of all heavenly planets. Thus it appeared that the Lord was personally spreading the beauty and good fortune of the spiritual world. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharini Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarini. So request the blessings of all the devotees that I can say something that is in line with the Shastra, that is hopefully pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, pleasing to the devotees, and I feel very unqualified. And as fact, as I get older, I'm 56, I feel less and less qualified, because as you get older, you slow down. And I used to be a little bit like an Antachyuta Prabhu, always studying the scripture. And now I look at him and I go, I wish I had his enthusiasm, you know. And I still can't figure out, is it because I've committed an offence that I've lost my enthusiasm? Or is it just old age, my brain's slowing down? But anyway, I'm very... How do you feel? Do you lose it? Same thing. We should always take the humble approach and just say it's due to our offences, you know. This chapter, it highlights several points of our philosophy. One of them is the superiority of the personalists over the impersonalists, and another is the danger of committing aparad. This particular purport, in this purport, Prabhupada describes it as murder. To commit aparad is like murdering one's spiritual life. And I was reflecting, you know, Vaishnava aparad is discussed a lot in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and as an exercise, I thought, is it described in every canto? So I thought I'd go through each canto, and I'd invite you to give me some examples of the pastimes where there is Vaishnava aparad. So we're in the third canto. Of course, we have this pastime of Jai and Vijay. That's an apparent aparad. And I'm going to call it an apparent aparad because there's an interesting discussion in the fifth canto. And I'll read it to you. This is from chapter 5. Text 1, purport. This is an interesting discussion on the Jai and Vijay pastime. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there are two kinds of impediments to devotional service. The first is an offence at the lotus feet of a Vaishnav. This is called Vaishnava Parad. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned his devotees not to commit Vaishnava Parad, which he described as the mad elephant offence. When a mad elephant enters a beautiful garden, it destroys everything, leaving a barren field. Similarly, the power of Vaishnava aparad is so great that even an advanced devotee becomes almost devoid of his spiritual assets if he commits it. Since Krishna consciousness is eternal, it cannot be destroyed altogether, but advancement may be checked for the time being. Thus, Vaishnava aparad is one kind of impediment to devotional service. Sometimes, however, the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee desires to impede one's devotional service. It's very interesting. For example, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were formerly Jai and Vijay, the gatekeepers in Vaikuntha, But by the desire of the Lord, they became his enemies for three lives. Thus, the desire of the Lord is another kind of impediment. But in both cases, the pure devotee, once advanced in Krishna consciousness, cannot be lost. So Jai and Vijay, they were cast down for a certain pastime, and therefore this is considered an impediment by the desire of the Lord. Is it an impediment? It's described that they had the benediction that they would never forget Krishna. So even as they were acting their pastimes as Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, or as, is it Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and as Shishupal and Dantavakra, they never forgot their eternal position. So actually, they weren't lost. But this particular, one of the reasons I read this purport is because I used to puzzle over a apparent contradiction. It says in the Bhagavad Gita, Neha Brikkama Nashasti Prachavaya Navijati Svalpam Apyasa Dharmasho Trayate Mahatobayat. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on the path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Then when we read about Vaishnava Aparad, we read about uprooting the devotional kripa. So the question then arises, well, if there's no loss or diminution, is the devotional kripa uprooted or not? If it's uprooted, it seems that there is loss and diminution. So what is the conclusion? What is the way to understand this? Yes.
I was thinking that it basically stops you from advancing, mm-hmm. rather than it actually stopping your progress or diminishing in that sense. So it doesn't allow you to advance anymore because the mercy is not there for you to advance.
So it stops your advancement, but it doesn't diminish.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's a question: if it doesn't diminish, why is it that some people who commit Vaishnava Aparad, they leave the association of devotees and they fall into Maya big time? That happens a lot.
The mercy aspect is removing.
Yeah. So is that diminution or not? No. Okay. So you're saying that it's there and it's a temporary covering, and then when they rectify or they're forgiven, then they can carry on from where they left off.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, in this purport, it's mentioned, the important part here is, one becomes almost devoid of his spiritual assets. Since Krishna consciousness is eternal, it cannot be destroyed altogether. So this is a very good answer, because it's specifically talking about Vaishnava Aparad, and it still says it cannot be destroyed altogether because it's eternal. So even if one commits Aparad, there's always a future, one that has not been forgotten completely by Krishna. And there's a nice, interesting pastime in Bhakti Ratnakara of Rupa Goswami. He's meditating on a pastime, Radha Krishna pastime, and he starts laughing in his meditation. And he's in the forest, and then there's a lame Vaishnav sitting nearby. And Rupa Goswami doesn't know this, but the Vaishnav hears Rupa Goswami laughing, and he thinks, he's laughing at me. At that time, Rupa Goswami, he lost his taste. And he went to Sanatana Goswami and said, I'm losing my taste for devotional service. I don't understand why. Sanatana Goswami says, well, maybe you've offended someone. Well, how will I know? He said, well, why don't you invite everyone for prasadam, and whoever doesn't turn up, you'll know you've offended that person. So Rupa Goswami did that, and this lame Vaishnav, he didn't turn up. So Rupa Goswami went to him and asked him, did I offend you? And the Vaishnav said, you were laughing at me. You know, I took offense. You were laughing at me. And Rupa Goswami explained, it was a pastime. I was just laughing at the pastime. And at that point, Rupa Goswami, he was very humble. He offered obeisances to this Vaishnav. And this Vaishnav was also very humble. He felt wrong that he'd misunderstood Rupa Goswami. So the two Vaishnavs, they made up. And then Rupa Goswami's taste was then revived again. So this is interesting pastime, because it shows that even accidentally, it can affect our spiritual life. So let's go to this. This is the third canto. And I was reflecting on Vaishnava Aparad is appearing in most cantos. Where is it found in the fourth canto? Pastime involving Vaishnava Aparad. Daksha, yes. So Daksha, who did he offend? Yes, he offended Lord Shiva, and as a result, he ended up with the head of a goat. Yes. Fifth canto, any examples? Yes. He offended Bharat. Jad Bharat, yes. And you sent me that sloka, right? I'll read this. This is after Maharaj Rahugana comes to his senses. He says, "My dear sir, I am not at all afraid of the thunderbolt of King Indra, nor am I afraid of the serpentine, piercing trident of Lord Shiva. I do not care about the punishment of Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, nor am I afraid of fire, scorching sun, moon, wind, nor the weapons of Kuvera. Yet I am afraid of offending a Brahmana. I am very much afraid of this." This is King Rahugana when he realizes, because Jad Bharat, he's in disguise. He doesn't want anyone to disturb him, so he pretends to be foolish. Jada means dumb, foolish. And Rahugana, the king, proud king, thought, he's not carrying my palanquin properly. He's actually avoiding the ants. And he chastised him. And then when Jad Bharat spoke, he realized, oh, this person's not ordinary. He's got potency. He's self-realized, and he apologized. Where else in the fifth canto do we see offenses? Still Jad Bharat, later on, Jad Bharat pastime. What happens later on? Yeah, that, I think that was earlier on. Maybe it was later on. How about the dacoits? Who's that? There was a group of dacoits. They thought, let's sacrifice this animal. He's not even a man. He's so retarded. He's like an animal. Let's sacrifice him to Goddess Kali. And what happened? She jumps off the altar and cuts off their heads and starts kicking their heads around like a football. So that's the upper, another example of Vaishnava aparad. Just the thought of trying to sacrifice a Vaishnav to the Goddess Kali. What about the sixth canto? Any examples? Thank you. Any other examples? Daksha Tanarimuni, tell me more. I'm puzzled on that one. Yes. Seventh canto? Yes, Hiranyakashipu, who did he offend? Yes, bigot, not very difficult one that. Tried to kill Prahlad, and Prahlad being protected by Lord Vishnu. Recently someone was telling me it was Vishnu in the form of Varaha caught him when Hiranyakashipu threw him off the cliff. Eighth canto. I'll give you a clue. In the eighth canto, it's discussed how the demigods, they lost control of the heavenly planets. It was due to an offense. And it was, once again, it was Indra, but it's a different offense. Yes. So Indra's on his elephant. He's proud. Durvasa Muni gives him a garland. He gives the garland to the elephant. The elephant drops the garland and tramples it. And due to that offense, the demigods lost control of the heavenly planets. Ninth canto? Yes. Now, this time, Durvasa Muni is on the other side. He's the one committing the offense to Ambarish. So he's now suffering from pride of being a Brahmana. Ambarish is the Kshatriya, according to Varnashram. Ambarish is lower, but Ambarish is the devotee. Yeah. What's that phrase? Yasya yal lakshinam proktam varnashrama bi bhyanjagaha yadanyatrapi drishitat tat tenaiva vinyodishet. Maharaj Yudhisthira says, if you see the qualities of another varna in someone, you should go by the qualities, not by the birth. So in the case of Ambarish Maharaj, because he is a Vaishnav, he is transcendental to be nakshatriya, even though that's his duty. Also in the ninth canto, there's a pastime of Subari Muni. So he was doing meditation underwater and he fell down and he got and ended up marrying, how many was it? Around 50 daughters of one sage. So he fell down from his meditation due to an offense. Does anyone know what offense Subari Muni committed? He cursed Garuda, yes. He thought he was being nice. Shishi Radhago Kulanda Kijai. He thought he was being nice by protecting the fish in a lake. And so he said to Garuda, you cannot come here. Cursed Garuda not to be able to come to this lake. And as a result of that, Kaliya the serpent actually knew about this curse, which is why he resided where he did, because he knew that Garuda wouldn't be able to attack him, because at one point the fish community were offering sacrifices for the benefit of Garuda, and Kaliya, being very impudent, he decided to eat the sacrifice that was meant for Garuda, and then he was then, out of fear of Garuda, he had to flee that area, and he took shelter in the place where later on Krishna chastised Kaliya. So we see that this is an example of Subari Muni, someone who's very advanced, and then he falls down due to Vaishnava Parad. 10th canto, any examples? Yes, Nalakuvaran Manigriva. So they were naked before Narad Muni. And of course, Narad Muni's curse is a blessing in disguise. Any other examples from the 10th canto? Brahma. So what was the... Okay, is that an aparad to the cows and the cow boys? I guess it is. A lot of the offences in the 10th canto are offences to Krishna, but Brahma was offensive to Krishna, but yeah, he stole the cows and the calves. There's another example, Indra offends the residents of Vrindavan, tries to drown the inhabitants of Vrindavan, that's a big aparad. Yeah? Rukmi offended Balaram, yes. Offended Balaram, yes. Balaram is a Vaishnav, and so is that offending the personality of Godhead or offending a Vaishnav? It's both, actually, because he's supreme personality of Godhead's servitor. Yes, Rukasura. I was thinking of that one. Offends. Rukasura gets the benediction that whoever he touches, they will die. So then he tries out that curse. He tries that benediction out on Lord Shiva himself, and then that was his offense. 11th canto, any examples? The Yadus. Yes, exactly. And that's actually described as an aparad. It's Samba, you know, as young people do, they like to joke around. So these young Yadus, they took Samba and they pretended that Samba was a woman and she was pregnant, and they went to the sages and go, will it be a boy or a girl? And what did they say? You'll give birth to a club which will destroy the Yadu dynasty. And they went back to King Ugrasena. And he was very, very disturbed by this. So he tried to avert the curse, ground up the club into little pieces and scattered it in the sea. And there was a little bit left over. So what happened? A fish swallowed that bit left over. And then Jara the hunter, when he got this piece, he turned that into an arrow. And the little filings, they turned into, was it bamboo? And later on, when the Yadu dynasty were drunk on some fermented rice drink, they fought each other and killed each other using these bamboo rods, which had become very, very powerful because they had been imbued with extra potency due to the iron filings. And the little piece, Jara the hunter, he fired that arrow, which apparently killed Krishna. So you see how they could not avert the curse. 12th canto, examples. It's not actually hard to find. I was struggling to find one. But it is described how the kings in Kali Yuga, they are offensive. They persecute the brahmanas. How about the first canto? There's one example in the first canto. Sringi, yes. Prabhupada says that Parikshit Maharaj was not offensive, but Sringi was offensive. What Sringi, his retaliation was offensive to Parikshit Maharaj. And second canto? Actually, it's discussed in a purport. You know the verse, Etan nirvijamananam ichitam akatobayam, yoginam nirpanirnitam harinam anukirtanam. The doubtless and fearless path of all is to constantly chant the holy names of the Lord, whether one is desirous of all things, or whether one is free from desire, or whether one is atmarama. Atmarama means self-satisfied. So in that purport, Prabhupada describes the various aparads. Now, which of all the aparads is the greatest aparad? Anyone know? Nam aparad. Vaishnava aparad? Actually, there's more than one answer. What's the greatest nam aparad? Vaishnava aparad is one of them. It's described in Sanskrit as parama aparad. Any other aparads of the 10 offenses to the holy name are considered the most serious? To commit sinful activities in the strength of chanting, that's said to be the most grievous of all offenses. And as another example, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. So it just goes to show, if you want to understand Prabhupada, you have to read all of his books, because he says different things at different times. So that's a little bit about aparad. Now, Rupa Goswami, he was taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Prayag. So it's described how let's talk about the mad elephant. So the word for hand in Sanskrit is hasta. One who possesses a hand is described as hasti. So that's the name for an elephant, because an elephant's trunk can be used to grab things, so it's like having a hand. A hastani sahastanam, apadani chatuspatam, palgani tatra mahatam, jivo jivasya jivanam. It's said in the second canto that those with no hands and no legs, they are food for the four-legged. Those with hands are those with four legs are food for those who have hands. It's an interesting statement. It's referring to the wild cats. Wild cats are said to be sahastanam. They have hands. Now, in sort of English, in the kind of Western science, we don't consider wild cats to have hands, but it's a very clever observation, because if you see, for example, antelope, they can run away from a cat, but an antelope cannot catch or cannot even defend itself against, say, a lion, because a lion's got hands, because a lion can, as it runs, it can pounce and it can grab with its hands. Therefore, the four-legged creatures, we think of cats as having four legs, but actually they're not chatuspat. Chatuspat means the antelope, the cow, you know, the buffalo, but the tigers, the lions, they're like sahasti. They have hands because they can use it to grab. So there, that's where the word hasti comes from. And as I said, the trunk of the elephant is like a hand. So when you turn Sanskrit into Bengali, Bengali is like lazy Sanskrit, right? No offense to Bengalis. Bengali, you know, Mahaprabhu, he's the avatar, and he came and he spoke Bengali. So it's a very blessed language. But it's like when you drop, like from the word kshir, milk, you get kheer. Parikshit, Prabhupada would sometimes say prikit. He wouldn't pronounce the S. So from hasti, you get hati. Hati means the elephant. So hati mata means the mad elephant idea. So that's like an offense. And when Mahaprabhu was discussing this, he said we should protect our garden. And the way to protect it is you follow the four regulative principles and you associate with devotees. If we do that, we're protected from the mad elephant offense. And if we're lax, then we can become offensive and criticize. So essentially, it's almost like when someone becomes critical, they can be saved by good association. But if they become too critical, then Krishna arranges for them to leave the association of devotees altogether to save them from further aparad. So, and sometimes what happens is people who are offensive, they don't realize, they think they're making the decision to leave. Sometimes they start to criticize and they look down on devotees and they create, sometimes it's like almost justified some of their reasoning, but then they exaggerate it and they become too absorbed in it. So they think they're leaving the association of devotees due to some fault on the part of devotees. But actually, it's Krishna's cheating them, and they're actually looking down on devotees for the wrong reason, and then they are seeing themselves as higher. Sometimes they go off to some other sangha, and I'm not saying other sanghas aren't good, but it might not be necessarily be for the right reasons like that. So that's a little bit about the danger of aparad. And we've run out of time. I was going to talk about the akshara, the kumaras, they are attached to the impersonal feature. I had a class prepared on that as well, but I don't have time to go through it. Eh? A few words about it, yeah. So, tasyaravinda, nainasya padaravinda, kinjalka mishra tulasi, makaranda vayuhu, antar gata, svavivarena, chakara chesham, shankshogyam, shogyam, akshara jisham, apichedatanvo. It's said that the four kumaras, they were akshara jusha, means they were attached to the impersonal feature of the Supreme. They were Brahmavadis, but when they smelled the aroma of tulsi from the lotus feet of the Lord, then shankshobam, they became disturbed in a nice way. They lost their composure, and although they were akshara jusha, they became shankshobam, akshara jusham, apichedatanvo, in both body and mind, they became disturbed in ecstasy. So it's actually explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that those who are in Shantaras, and that's the four Kumaras, the Udipana means stimulus for love. One of the Udipanas is smelling Tulsi. So this particular verse, which is found in this chapter, is quoted by Rupa Goswami. So that means that those who are in Shantaras, when they smell the lotus feet, the Tulsi fragrance, they become ecstatic in devotional service. And there are other udipanas. In fact, every rasa has its own udipanas. But for this shantaras, the conch shell is another udipana, here in the conch shell. If one conquers over one's senses, that is itself an udipana. If one goes to a holy place in a mountain, for example, that's considered an udipana. Reflecting on the temporary nature of life, that's another udipana. So those in shantaras, when they meditate on these things, they develop their love for Krishna awakens like that, you see. So that's a little bit about Udipana. And I'll open up to the floor. Thank you all for your patience. Hare Krishna. Anyone like to comment? Thank you. We've got a few questions and comments. Thank you. Okay. Paramakaruna first. Hare Bo.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the class. At the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada seemed to be indicating that pure devotee can commit an offense.
Yes.
Right. So, question is how are we to understand this, especially in relationship to what you mentioned? If one is in the association of the devotees, one is following four regulative principles, right? Then one can avoid offenses. And then also, the second part of the question is, can a pure devotee take offense? Because advanced devotee knows that everything is arranged by Krishna, Krishna's everywhere.
Yes.
Whatever faults someone else is committing or mistakes they're making is just a covering arrangement of illusory potency, for example.
Yes.
So, yeah,
thank you.
Elaborate on that.
I'll take the second part first. A devotee doesn't take offense, but he may take offense about how we treat other devotees. A devotee can become very offended at the way we treat other devotees. So, yeah. I mean, there's a number of examples. I mean, I gave the example of Rupa Goswami. So there's an example of an accidental, apparent offense. And then we have the example of the Lord chooses, or a devotee chooses, to impede someone's devotional service through an apparent offense. These are the only two examples I can think of. And our sense of justice would make us think that it wouldn't be fair. At this pastime, Rupa Goswami, it's a pastime, and it's just a temporary little pastime, and we actually really suffered. I don't think that anyone who accidentally commits an offense is going to be severely punished by the Lord. I just don't think that's fair, and but it is a valid question. And does anyone have any particular understanding on this? Well, the one that, yeah. The word sincere, was it? His devotee does not commit... When a mad elephant... Okay, similarly, the power of Vaishnavabra is so great that even an advanced devotee becomes almost devoid of spiritual assets. His advancement may be checked for some time. No, I can't see the word. Anyway, it does say at the end that his Krishna consciousness cannot be lost. Okay. Yeah.
Krishna, so this topic of offenses has been talked about a lot in the Shastras. As a result, what happens or what may happen is that we may become terrified to the degree that we may not be able to take full advantage of the association of the superiors.
Mm-hmm.
We might limit our dealings to hi, hello, thank you, goodbye. And as a result, we are not able to tap the treasure and locked in their hearts. Once I went with an innocent question to a speaker after the class. So this devotee somehow got offended or basically was upset. So my immediate next reaction was that no more going to the speaker next time. Right? So yeah. What's the right balance? There are so many devotees who are inspiring. Yes. But if we are not able to take advantage, then it's our misfortune.
Yes. As you said, it's all about balance. And sometimes we don't know what path, if we're taking the right path or not. But the proof of the pudding is in the eating. If our course of action helps us advance in devotional service, then it was the correct one. And if it takes us away from devotional service, it's not correct. You give the example of someone who may be thinking, I don't want to commit aparad, so they disassociate themselves from devotees. But if that person then their devotional creeper dries up, then you know there was a wrong decision to make, and there may be some other ulterior motive. Maybe even subconsciously they're looking for an excuse. We should always be, you know, we should have faith in the good nature of devotees, that they will forgive us. And in the morning when we say this prayer, Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhebacha, Patitanam Pavanibhyo, Vaishnavibhyo, Namo Namaha, we're going to pray at that point that, you know, please forgive my offenses to the devotees, even those offenses that I've unknowingly committed, you know. So we have to take advantage. It's the same with serving the spiritual master closely. Some people, they're afraid to do it in case they commit offenses, but then there's so much nectar and so much advancement can be made. So it's kind of, the stakes are higher. So I think we have to take advantage. I mean, it's good to bodhayanta parasparam. We have to enlighten one another and ask questions, you know, par pari prashna. Such an important part that we take the risk and we learn how to ask the question very nicely. And we apologize if we say it the wrong way. That's my answer. Hare Krishna. Rumpu.
As long as our intention when we've approached someone is in the right place, then you'd be protected. So watching for our mentality when we're questioning is part of that process of protecting yourself.
Thank you. Pramanava Prabhu.
If we offend another devotee and we go to that devotee and ask for forgiveness, it's said that we really have to mean it. If you ask for forgiveness, but you're not sincerely deep inside asking for forgiveness, then it's difficult for that devotee to forgive.
Okay.
And yeah. So humility is very important if you commit offense. It says Krishna's in our heart and he purifies the devotee who's committed the offense. But they really have to want it. They really have to sincerely be humble. And otherwise it's difficult to forgive someone if they don't mean it.
Yeah, it's a good point.
And
Thank
it said
you.
That even if the devotee doesn't forgive, eventually, it may be many, many lifetimes, but eventually Krishna does forgive. I can't remember where I read it, but I always remember things, but I never forget. I never remember where. But Krishna eventually forgives. So you're making that point about the kripa, is it completely destroyed? It's not completely destroyed.
So it was
there's always an opportunity.
Also, in Harinam Chintamani, it says that, in relation to Brahmana Prabhu's point, that the repentant mood of constantly chanting, if somehow we're not getting forgiveness, will rectify. If somehow,
the
devotee's left the planet or something, and you haven't managed to resolve that issue, the fact that we're feeling, oh gosh, Krishna, forgive me, I didn't clear my offenses.
Prabhupada taught a very good example, close to the time when Prabhupada was leaving his bodies, he asked for forgiveness to all his godbrothers. And one godbrother, Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, commented, you know, there's nothing for you to apologize for. You've done some great service. And this is an interesting pastime. At the end, when Prabhupada was preaching, at one point, he took his disciples to India, and they were very badly trained. So they were kind of handling plates of prasadam and wiping their nose and stuff. So Puri Maharaj, he was a brahmachari at the time, he was offered prasadam and he wouldn't take because he was very high class Brahmin. Later on, this Puri Maharaj, he was given a temple, and he wrote to Prabhupada and said, listen, I've been given this temple and it's dilapidated. Could you provide funds? And Prabhupada said, yeah, well, I'm very wealthy, all this money from book distribution, but you couldn't possibly take this money because it's passed through the hands of the malechas. It's not very pure. Because he noticed that he hadn't taken prasad, so he made a little joke like that. And I heard heard recently that there was a personal servant of Puri Maharaj. He actually told him about this pastime. He was there when Puri Maharaj read this letter, and he burst out laughing because he could see that Prabhupada was making a joke at his expense. You know, you don't want to take prasad from my disciples, I'm not going to give you any money, kind of thing. But what's interesting was at the time that Prabhupada was leaving the planet, he asked Puri Maharaj, you know, can you sing Jai Radhe, Jai Krishna, Jai Brindavan? So he could go, Prabhupada was going on Parakram in his mind. And because Puri Maharaj, he wanted to do some service, so he asked him to do that service. And then Prabhupada said, I want to give something for you. And he had called one of his disciples over. And then he took, and he goes, now I'm giving this prasadam from my own hand. And he gave some prasadam. And Puri Maharaj, he said that when he ate that prasadam, he suddenly got the realization, all his kind of subtle bit of caste consciousness disappeared. And he realized, actually, the Westerners, they can become pure devotees as well. So it's very potent prasadam. It's a lovely pastime. Hare Krishna. Anyone, any further comments or questions? I'm just going to finish on one point, one observation, and it's very destructive, but it's dangerous. You can use Vaishnava Parad to gaslight people, and it's a really nasty thing to do because it causes people distress. So you can say to someone, oh, you're offensive, you're this, you're that, and it may be maybe the opposite, maybe someone themselves is offensive, but they then project it onto the other person. And what happens, that person will suffer, and eventually they may even get angry. And then you go, I just see, he's angry, proves that he's the offensive person. That kind of mentality, very, 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 very destructive to devotees' spiritual life. And so we have to be very careful that we don't kind of go around pointing the finger at other people and gaslighting them. because it's Krishna will sort that out in due course of time.
Why does Krishna allow that?
Yeah, why does Krishna allow that? Okay. It's Purushottam Mass. Were you upstairs a few days ago? I was mentioning, why did this Pandava suffer? And why did Draupadi suffer? And the answer was something she did in her previous life. She had offended Purushottam Mass. You know the story? She had no husband, and Durvasa Muni, she did some service for Durvasa Muni, and then she confided in Durvasa Muni, saying, I have no husband. And he said to her, you should follow Purushottam Mass Vrat. And she was like, but this is a mala, it's mala mass, it's an impure month, why are you telling me this? And due to that offense, she had to suffer in her next life. That's why Dushasana attempted to disrobe her, why she had to live in the forest under difficult situation. And actually, that Krishna came to the forest and told the Pandavas, you're suffering because you never observed Purushottam Mass while you were in the forest, but the next time Purushottam Mass comes, if you observe it nicely, you will regain your kingdom. And that's what happened. So in answer to your question, there's something going on maybe from previous lives. Maybe the people that are suffering this way, maybe they were gaslighting in their, they were managers or something of some devotional community, and they were gaslighting people, or they were harsh to the Vaishnavas, and now they have to undergo a taste of their own medicine. Doesn't justify it, because we shouldn't judge people on previous lives. Justice is based on this life, but there's something going on. Hare Krishna. Yes.
I like that last point that you said about calling people offenders and then they actually become like angry. Because I studied about it in sociology. It's called the self-fulfilling prophecy. And if you call somebody, you know, like you're so naughty, you're so rude, then they actually act in that way.
Yes. You torture someone until they react and then you go, just see. I told you. They reacted. They're the bad person. Reuben Prabhu.
I've heard Vaishnavas saying that when you constantly speak about the faults of others, it's like creating a bridge between their heart and yours. Mm. And if that devotee just keeps quiet and tolerates all of those sinful reactions or whatever he's being criticized will go to the heart of the other person. Mm,
yes.
So it's again, that's the cause of their anger in the end, is their misconduct. So just tolerate and Krishna will take care of it if you're in that position.
That's one. There's two approaches. You can go to authorities or you can tolerate.
According to what's necessary, both.
So I said in the Mahabharata, if you tolerate someone's offenses, then you gain their good qualities and they get your bad qualities. Yeah. So that justice is there. It's there. We just don't see it. Yeah. Thank you so much. Anyway, thank you all for your patience. I've overrun a little bit. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Tai Gaur Premanand.
Govinda Prabhu Ki Jai.